Robert Kelly, you founded TheaterWorks in 1970. You were just a graduate student or a graduate of Stanford at that point?
I was a Stanford grad, but I taught school for a year back east and came back here and got involved with what would become TheaterWorks. It started as a single project in the summer of 1970. The goal was to create a new work of musical theater, which we did. It was tremendously successful, and the company sort of continued as a result, doing primarily new works for the first 2 or 3 years and then gradually growing and changing over time into the professional company it is today. I have to say that a lot of things that were part of the company in the earliest days have remained a big part of what we do now.
Which is?
Well, certainly our commitment to new works and new works that are both dramatic and musical, that's certainly a big part of it. The kind of culturally inclusive work that is typical of TheaterWorks involves different races and different ethnicities, different points of view. That's a big part of what we do. To be honest, the work was sort of a celebration of our community and its potential, and a lot of the work we do actually does that today still.
Do you have much contact with the other theater companies around the area?
Not a huge amount. I mean, we all know each other, of course, and are supportive of each other's work. I think the place that we cross over the most is in terms of actors from the region and designers and so on, because both actors and designers are finding work all around the Bay Area as part of their artistry.
In terms of Bay Area theater, I noticed over the past few years that ACT and Berkeley Rep have been moving more into the realm of producing shows that might go to Broadway. I think this is probably because the old circuit of New Haven has disappeared and been replaced by these theater companies, as well as the Goodman and Steppenwolf and La Jolla Playhouse, other companies like that. And in those terms, it seems that A Christmas Memory is following along in those footsteps, I would say.
Well, the team that created it is made up of film and theater industry pros. Carol Hall and Larry Grossman, who did the lyrics and music respectively, are both the Broadway vets, and Dwayne Poole, the author of the book, wrote the last TV movie of the same show. So they definitely have the credentials to be thought of as a Broadway team. But I think this show is actually aimed at the whole country, not at one, you know, particular city or one particular route to success. I think if anyone has a dream for it, it's that eventually it'll be seen in every city in the country.
I was in New York last week and happened to be sitting at dinner, and next to us was a theater student. And I said, if you could ask someone like Robert Kelly a question, what would it be? Because she's kind of about 5 feet tall and a little bit on the chunky side. And her question was, will we ever be moving back into a time when talent is more important than the physical appearance of a tall, lithe, blonde girl in the lead?
Well, in the world of theater, it's not as important as it is, say, in the world of films. Obviously, in the film world and modeling and all that, there's a physical standard that is dominating the industry. But in the world of theater, that's not the case. I really do think it's a place where talent is what truly counts, and you're looking for a different set of physical and intellectual criteria with every new play. Any great actor can look around and look at the roles that come up and find something that fits them to a T if they have great talent. It's your skills and not necessarily your look. On the other hand, if the part calls for a tall, lithe blonde and you are a short, dark, non-beauty or what have you, then you're actually auditioning for the wrong part. Find the part that works for you. And there's tons of them. I mean, our play is a great example. It's a play full of character actors. They're not out there because of their physical beauty, although they're all gorgeous, of course. But it's the inner person that counts. And that's actually one of the messages of the play.
Robert Kelly, where do you see theater going now? I mean, things have changed a lot over the past 20 years. You know, Broadway now can't support shows like Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson or Scottsboro Boys, and it bothers me because the shows that I find interesting, like those, as opposed to Elf or, you know, Shrek the Musical, whatever their quality, it bothers me that may be disappearing.
Well, there's no question that the big, sometimes more serious shows are having a hard time in New York. But New York isn't everything. There's a big world out there and a big United States that supports art of all kinds. We talked about Sideshow earlier, and that show had a wonderful life here at TheaterWorks that actually contributed to a further life for it around the country when it was successful here outside of the borders of New York City. There are many like that. I feel that there's a place for, you know, great art everywhere in the country. It's somewhat determined by the region you're in, and certainly here in the Silicon Valley, we emphasize things that are new because that's the ethos of our area and our era, where everybody believes they're creating the next great thing in their garage and it'll become a national monument someday, like Hewlett and Packard's garage. There's a real strong respect for new works. That, I think, is going to be one of the salvations of, you know, the American theater, that there's lots of places where new and exciting and interesting things are being developed. Not all of them are going to work for New York. Not all of them are going to have long commercial lives, but things like August Osage County came out of Chicago and was just wonderful. A Light in the Piazza, you know, was developed in Seattle and then moved forward. And, well, Memphis, which I think is a wonderful musical that's going to last through all of our lifetimes for, you know, it's just a great piece. Started here at TheaterWorks.
Do you see any difference between your audience and, say, the audience of ACT or Berkeley Rep?
Sure. Although we're all in the Bay Area, the different cities are quite different in terms of their audience and what they're looking for. San Francisco is brings in certainly a lot of people from the peninsula, but we've found that our audience is kind of looking for a different experience, maybe a little more accessible experience. We emphasize things that we create ourselves, things that are being developed here, and not so much star-driven, not so much things that are traveling from around the country. So among those three theaters, you get a real good variety. I mean, certainly ACT and Berkeley are completely different in terms of what appeals to them at the artistic level and therefore to their audiences, and so are we. But if you put them all together and imagined a season of 24 plays instead of 8 in any one place, I mean, you'd really get a phenomenal range of theater. We obviously emphasize a lot more musical theater because we're doing 3 musicals out of 8 shows every year. They're generally speaking dramatic musicals because that's what appeals to me, to our, you know, to our staff, and certainly to our audience.
How important are reviews to you?
Well, they're helpful, especially when it's something new, you know, to get honest response, because you're not just doing a play for the immediate moment, but for its longer life and longer potential in the American theater. And anything you can learn with a new work that's honest criticism is, I think, ultimately helpful. In terms of ticket sales, we found that the reviews in our local papers that are closer to our theater probably have a more direct influence than things in the larger papers coming out of San Francisco. And we're also a little closer to San Jose, so what happens in that, in the main paper there, the Mercury News, makes a pretty big difference in terms of the sales of things down here. Personally, reviews can be all over the map. It would be an extraordinary play that didn't have both positive and negative reviews. It just almost never happens. I can probably count 3 plays and, you know, in 40 years where it's been all one or all the other.
A lot of people around here don't have a huge amount of money, and they have to be kind of careful, students in particular. Do you have programs, ways for people can see these things really inexpensively?
We do previews, and that's, I think, the easiest way to do. There's always an opportunity to usher at our theaters down here. We have seating that's sort of tiered price seating, so that on any given show, there's a pretty big difference between some seats and others in terms of their cost. Fortunately, the theaters themselves are actually pretty small, so you get a great seat wherever you happen to be, but it does help people who are at a lower income level or, you know, are in school or what, all these different kinds of things, or educators, help them to come to the theater and make an evening of it. It's to our advantage, it's to everyone's advantage to keep this difficult, challenging, and inherently expensive art form alive and accessible to as many people as possible.
You use 2 theaters. They're not yours specifically. One is Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. The other
is the Lucy Stern Theater in Palo Alto.
Do you decide what goes in where, or do they kind of say, well, this is when the theater's available?
Every year there's a new set of dates and all of that, but they generally start to fall into a pattern over a few years' time. So we have a pretty good idea what dates are going to be available to us, and we are thought of as resident companies in both cities. That said, the two theaters are quite different in their sort of style and their layout. For example, the theater in Palo Alto is 26 feet across the opening of the proscenium. In Mountain View, it's 50 feet across. So you can imagine the challenges are totally different in each space. And in some cases, the Lucy Stern Theater is more adaptable to smaller things and to more intimate things. It's built in 1933. It's very intimate inside. The other theater, for a larger theater at 600 seats, is also intimate, but it has a big wide stage, and you can do some things that really require some scope to pull off. Something like Light in the Piazza, for us, was better there than it would have been in the smaller space.
Where is 39 Steps going to be?
39 Steps is at Mountain View, at the Mountain View Center. You'd sort of think, why not put it in Stern? Well,
there's only four people in it.
There's only four people in it. But putting it over in Mountain View allows us to build what looks like a theater, with also having boxes on the sides. You have to see a whole bunch of the theater that's not just the stage. If you tried to do all of that at Lucy Stern, there would be literally a postage stamp in the middle. And in this case, it's the right theater for the job.
When you're bringing shows that appeared in New York and kind of disappeared thereafter, and then you're bringing them and creating new productions like Light in the Piazza or Bat Boy or now 39 Steps, do you feel any interest in trying to maintain the original direction? Do you feel like you need to go in a new direction with it? With the direction itself?
You know, it really depends on the play. 39 Steps is a play that evolved over something like 8 or 9 years. And there's a lot of things in it that look improvised, but actually they're like juggling. There's a certain way that you do it if you want it to be successful. So I think there's probably many aspects of the original show that will appear in our production. The joy is making new discoveries, you know, and bringing new things to it as it goes along. Something like The Light in the Piazza gives you an opportunity to create an Italian landscape, essentially, with these amazing buildings in Florence that is a whole new design challenge. And it was quite a thrill to build things that were 20 feet by 20 feet by 20 and move them around as if they were little toys in a toy theater. It was quite a challenge and quite a bit of fun. In that show, you're not in the same situation you would be in something like A Christmas Memory, where if something isn't working or if there's too many measures or there's too many this or that, you go to the authors and say, what can we do to fix this? And you fix it. In a established production, you're kind of stuck in a way with those things that happened in the original version, and sometimes you don't even realize what they are until you really get into the nuts and bolts of it and realize, oh, I see, they needed to do a costume change there or something, and that's why this scene exists, or that's why this extra refrain exists. I think when you're a director, and I've directed a lot of Shakespeare, you start realizing that there are certain scenes that are literally designed to cover the amount of time it takes to get up the stairs to the balcony, you know, or something like that, that are practical solutions to problems you can only imagine. You have, sort of have to reconstruct to figure out why they're there. And that's, I think that's part of the fun of it, too, reconstructing something for your own theater. The Light in the Piazza especially, up comes a scene that's in a particular specific piazza in Florence. Each designer, each director is going to maybe look at it from a slightly different angle, but ultimately you're in a giant piazza in Florence. Ultimately you're in the most expensive hotel in Florence in a bedroom. You need to find ways to solve those things, but inevitably it's going to involve a window, a curtain, a bed, and the bed has to be able to do certain things. So I think all of these shows find a way to be respectful of the people that have gone before while still hopefully putting an individual stamp on it.
Well, it would mean that something like Christmas Memory could actually have a completely different kind of set. I mean, you'd still have to have Buddy interacting, but the set itself could be completely different.
Well, there's no question about it. We use a lot of automation in this show, Christmas Memory, to move things on and off stage, but it's really not necessary. It can be done a lot of different ways to create it all. What you get is a scene set in a kitchen. You get a scene set on the front porch, or one set in a forest full of Christmas trees. when the writer writes it, it's just, you know, parentheses and six words, and we have to figure out how to get there and get back again from a design point of view. But I think any production of this show will find its own way to do that. All I knew when I first started it was that we had to have a real stove. I could just feel that there had to be one of those great, huge cast iron stoves, probably from the early 1900s, that had been in the house for ages. And we found the perfect stove, and a lot of things got built around that.
We're in a recession now. How has that affected you?
Well, certainly the very first year of the recession was extremely difficult for theaters all over the country, and including TheaterWorks. It happened kind of in the early fall. Among other things, we stopped selling subscriptions the day it happened. I mean, we didn't sell, I think, more than three or four more subscriptions the rest of the year, as everyone became extraordinarily cautious. A lot of donations went down. Our core donors stayed right with us and were extraordinarily loyal, but many of them said it's just going to have to be a little bit less this year as it went along. And meanwhile, you're committed to a season that you've already said you're going to do, so you can't very well start eliminating shows or substituting one-person shows for what's supposed to be a big musical or something like that. During the year, we cut back. We cut everything we could think of. We did lose a few positions in the company and generally tightened our belt. And by the next year, we were back in an even keel again. Actually, we're in the black this year, so we were very happy with the way it all worked out. This year we've also, you know, we've sold a few more subscriptions than before, and the subscribers are coming back and going up. I feel like we've weathered it and done pretty well. As you know, there certainly were theater companies, several that were threatened in the greater Bay Area, at least one that went under, the American Musical Theater of San Jose, and there were major theaters all over the country that just didn't make it through this particular time period. But I feel confident about what happened with TheaterWorks and that we really did all the right things to make it as successful as possible given the circumstances.
Next year, how many of those eight shows are already kind of set?
Well, to tell you the truth, none of them are actually set. You know, we're still dancing around with a lot of different shows that are under consideration, both musicals and dramas, comedies, lots of different things. It's also a time of year when you're exploring the rights to things that you'd love to do, but they may not be available at the moment, or they, you know, when a show might close or not close in New York has some things to do with that. It's a fascinating, nail-biting time. We generally do one or two world premieres each year, and there's quite a number of contenders, you know, that we're juggling, and it all kind of has to do with what else winds up on the season. So if you have a world premiere that's, I'm just inventing this, but say a two-character drama, but meanwhile there's another two-character drama, you know, that's a big Broadway hit that's just dying to be here for various reasons, you might delay one for a year or take the other one. There's just a lot of different things that go into making up the season. In our case, at least, because we do musicals of all kinds, from pop musicals to serious dramatic pieces, we're really looking at what I imagine to be more scripts than anyone else in a way, because the range is so great. But we have found that's one of the things our audience has come to appreciate, that they expect things to be new, they expect things to be different from things they've seen before, but they also expect a broad range.
Robert Kelly, the next show after this is something over New Year's, and then comes 39 Steps?
We're doing Striking 12 for a week. It's a musical, kind of a musical concert. It's a really unusual show that was a big hit for us 4 or 5 years ago by a group called Groove Lily. It's a band. It was a working band that works out of New York, but they created a stage version of a show based on The Little Match Girl. It's all set at New Year's Eve in a contemporary setting, and the band not only plays the show, but are also the characters in it. It's kind of in a way like A Christmas Memory. They play contemporary characters, but also characters back in the past in the era in which The Little Match Girl was written. And we've also done several other things by the same team of writers over the years. So it's only going to be 4 or 5 performances the week leading up to New Year's, but we are thrilled to bring it back. I didn't think we'd be able to get it. It's been done a couple times off-Broadway and was a big success in New York as an off-Broadway musical, but it just seemed to work out. They happened to have this week available, and we're all great friends, and it's a chance to see this great show all over again.
And then comes 39 Steps.
And 39 Steps.
And then,
well, the one after that is called The North Pool. It's the third world premiere on this season. This is a great season for premieres, with 3 out of 8 shows being world premieres. It's by a wonderful young writer named Rajiv Joseph. And curiously enough, this is his latest show. This will be the world premiere of it. But it also comes at a time when one of his other shows called A Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Gates is opening on Broadway with Robin Williams in the lead. And we're very thrilled to be producing this particular show. We did it as a first time out in our New Works Festival, a reading of the play, not this last summer, but the summer before. It was astonishing. It's a very tense, suspenseful piece that I think is going to electrify the community.
And is that the last show of the season?
Well, there's one more in April and May. Title of Show, which is a musical that went from off-off-Broadway to off-Broadway to Broadway, now to TheaterWorks. It's a really funny piece about a group of writers trying to create a musical in New York with a couple of actor friends of theirs. And it's certainly the ultimate in a contemporary backstage comedy.
It's kind of the ultimate meta-musical. It's about the creation of itself.
Right. You actually watch them writing the musical you're watching as it goes along. And
you've been listening to an interview with Robert Kelly of TheaterWorks in Silicon Valley. For more information about TheaterWorks, you can go to theaterworks.org. A Christmas Memory is playing through December 26th. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.